Hello everybody, I'm John Iderola. This is the Damage Report and it's a beautiful day in the neighborhood. You know, it just is. We've got Brett Ehrlich here. And we're in good moods.
It's Freaky Friday with Brett. I'm trying that one. Hey, it's Freaky Friday. I invented that
Did
term.
You come up? I've never
I forgot.
That, I like the alliteration.
Fun,
that's good.
Fun Fridays. Friday fun with Brett. We're gonna do some Friday fun.
Yesterday was I was gonna say Thanksgiving. Yesterday was Halloween. Did you do anything fun for Halloween, Brett?
My wife said that we could, that in her mind, carving a jack-o'-lantern takes an hour. But in reality, I told her it only takes 15 minutes. So we did an experiment where we determined whether it would only take 15 minutes. And once—
To do a basic
To do
thing.
A jack-o'-lantern. And it's about 15 minutes.
In my mind, I would have guessed 90 minutes.
90 minutes, but it doesn't. You just, when I was a kid, I would try to make like the eyeballs look like they had pupils, and I always failed.
Oh.
And it looks better when you just do the bare minimum.
Or you just marker it.
I just straight up made triangles.
I guess
15 minutes.
Yeah.
And it's delightful.
Okay, well, we're going to have to see a
delightful.
Photo.
What about you? You made some pasties.
Yeah, so really fast. You know what? Screw the news. We're going to talk about this for an hour.
It's fine.
Yeah, let's talk about the upcoming Game of Thrones prequel, you know?
Mm-hmm.
My fiance and I are big fans of The Curious Creations of Christine McConnell, which is a macabre baking show that was on Netflix for one season. It was only on Netflix for one season because Netflix management is stupid as hell and they didn't renew it for this Halloween.
Just so you know, if you go to John's house, it's already playing when you get there.
Yeah, it is.
Like
basically.
In March.
Always. But anyway, we baked a bunch of mini rhubarb pies with eyeballs baked into the top. And they looked pretty cool, except we, despite all of our preparation for this in watching Christine McConnell and also the Great British Bake Off, when I baked the bottom like part of the pie crust, and that was it, you do that first. I put in 12 of those and they came out and all of them were like ballooned up like this. Mm-hmm. Like not like a crust at all, really. So it's apparently, I've heard that cooking is an art and baking is a science. And I am neither artist nor scientist, apparently.
Fair enough. Just
pretty
really quick,
fun.
For Happy Half Hour, J.R. Jackson, who you might remember from J.R. Wednesdays on the program, we drink Honey Palomas and talk about all things Halloween, whether political or not.
Honey Paloma sounds like a Bond girl name from like the 70s. But anyway, I hear it's a good drink. We've got
kind of racist
news. What's that?
It's like it's also kind of racist.
Probably it's the Bond. Yeah, those man read some of those early Bond novels. Whew. Misogynistic and racist as hell. With that, let's just go into the news.
Yeah, speaking of misogynistic and racist as hell, Trump
exactly.
News.
Let's move into it. So we're gonna start off with Trump. We're just gonna jump right into it. As of today, Donald Trump is no longer a Manhattanite. He is packing up his stuff and moving down south, as many older Americans do. In paperwork filed with the Palm Beach County Clerk and Comptroller in late September, Trump declared, "I am, at the time of making this declaration, a bona fide," he totally came up with that word himself, "resident of the state of Florida." Melania Trump, the First Lady, filed an identical document.
I just would like to say that I'm sure the first time he typed bona fide, it was BONE-A-FYED. Like, I got it, bona fide.
Oh God, he didn't have to tweet it, then we would have really known. But he did tweet something about this change because after all, his family has lived in New York for a very long time. That's where his father like started the business, that's where his business has been. He's lived there for decades and not anymore. So he tweeted, 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, the White House, in case you didn't know, is the place I've come to love and will stay for hopefully another 5 years as we make America great again. But my family and I will be making Palm Beach, Florida our permanent residence, capitalized because why not? I cherish New York and the people of New York and always will. But unfortunately, despite the fact that I pay millions of dollars in city, state, and local taxes each year, I have been,
I would love if you proved
There's no way to, how could one prove it? I have been treated very badly by the political leaders of both the city and state. Few have been treated worse. I hated having to make this decision, but in the end, it will be best for all concerned. As president, I will always be there to help New York and the great people of New York. It will always have a special place in my heart. Well, we'll see at his next rally what he has to say about New York City.
He is so terrified of losing Florida, he had to move two votes there.
So you think it's the electoral implications?
It's only for, there's a lot of reasons to move to Florida.
Mm-hmm.
None of them because you wanted to.
Uh-huh. Well, but isn't Florida, like it's a swing state. But it's one of the swing states that swung more towards Republicans, especially as each election goes.
Listen, I was just messaging there, John. Mm-hmm. I was just talking about a message that you can pull from this. It's like, oh, he's so scared of the election, he's moving there for electoral reasons.
Yeah, but I want to jump into it, you know?
I will also say that, like, does this mean he, like, people who move from New York to Florida, they're retiring. Does that mean he's retiring? Just retire.
Damn. That would be great, but unfortunately not. So before we get into one other potential explanation for why he did this, we do have some responses from prominent New York political figures. Obviously sad, like it's great to have the president live in your city or state, and for them to go, that's a sad thing. And so Governor Andrew Cuomo said, good riddance. It's not like real Donald Trump paid taxes here anyway, he's all yours, Florida. And I love this, don't let the door hit you on the way out or whatever, quipped Mayor Bill de Blasio. Is that a quip?
It is. It would have been without the or whatever.
It's not much of a quip. But anyway, so they're obviously happy to see
what him
go.
What did you want to be like? You're terminated. Like, I don't know. Like, what is it? Like,
he's don't be back.
Yeah, that's funny.
It's, you know, Dark Fate's come out. You should go watch it. Anyway, it looks good. Yeah, I don't know. It's just, it's really like blunt. Like, it's not clever.
Just like the heightened discourse of politics today. Yeah. It's just like, don't let the door hit you on your way out.
Yeah.
I like the or whatever, because it's just like dismissive. Like, I did not myself here, but you haven't applied yourself ever in your life.
Yeah.
And then I like Cuomo saying, I mean, Cuomo's was a good quip. It was like, it's not like you pay taxes here anyway, buddy.
That's true. And so, look, that's what I think it's about, probably. But that can mean a couple different things. So a person close to the president said his decision was based mainly on taxes. But that makes it seem as if it's based on.
That's a fake name.
Can I, before you try to shred my argument, can I make my argument? That makes it seem as if like he doesn't want to pay the taxes there or something. But it is really an open question as to whether he ever has paid taxes there. We don't know because he refuses to actually release the documents that would prove one way or the other. In fact, he has dragged out a long-standing court battle that has not been trending his way in recent months to make sure that you can't figure out for sure. But let's compare the two. Florida does not have state income tax or an estate tax. In New York, meanwhile, the state's top tax rate is nearly 9%, and the city's top rate is nearly 4%. The state's top estate tax rate applying to fortunes greater than 10.1 million is 16%. So wait a second, I guess I've never thought about this. If there's state level estate taxes and you are born in New York and you live for 70 plus years in New York, but you can just flee to Florida like a month before you croak to not pay estate taxes, why doesn't everyone do that then?
People do that.
Yeah.
I mean, people retire from New York to Florida. Fort Lauderdale, that's what you do.
But I mean, you could specifically
in
do that.
City slickers, and when you're 80, you and your wife retire to Fort Lauderdale, you start eating lunch around 2 o'clock, and you know, 10, lunch around 10, breakfast the night before. Like, but no, John, you lost this discussion.
I didn't really make my point.
You did.
Okay, what?
Well, you,
how have I lost?
So this is so my argument back to you.
You haven't said why you think he's actually doing this.
Because he has been flushed out of New York because he always was a poser. He always was hated by people in New York.
Socially,
because he's socially. He always felt like he's been treated badly. These are snowbirds, but he's a snowflake heading south for the winter of his life. That's what's happened, is he is so triggered by everyone around him seeing him in New York for the sham that he is, that he wants to get out and move to Florida. And all this discussion of it being based mainly on taxes is a trap for you to read tax figures about Florida versus New York. And you fell for it.
I'm in the trap then.
You are. I mean, not you personally. I mean, you personally
no,
here,
this
but
sounds
like
very
just generally,
personal.
That's what he's doing. In the messaging, he's just saying, like, I want to say it's for taxes, when in reality, it's because everyone in New York hates him. And he's always vilified the elites of New York and Los Angeles. And now he eventually looked around and was like, I guess I should get out of here. And now he's moving to Florida, where he's still gonna live an elite life. Like, what a weird story it is to move to a resort. He's moving. They said in the reports he's making his house Mar-a-Lago. He's not making his house like some mansion somewhere. He's gonna live like, you know, in the model home or something. Like, it's this weird life where he's gonna be wandering around a country club.
So we're way over. So just really fast, I just want to say, when I say that I think it could be about taxes, I don't mean that he wants to pay less in taxes. I mean, I'm sure he does. He's cheap, but It doesn't matter. It doesn't make any material difference in his life whether he pays 0% taxes or 10% taxes or 50% taxes. It doesn't matter anyway. I think he's dumb enough to potentially think that if he flees New York, he might not be under the jurisdiction of certain Southern District of New York investigations of him or something like that. I think that's a possibility. I don't think that we should entirely write that off. Yes, I'm sure he has grown to feel more despised when he's in New York, but he hasn't spent much time in New York in the past couple of years. He spent a lot more time in Florida. So I don't know for sure. We're just putting it out there. Feel free to respond in the comments about what you think is the right explanation. Don't agree with Brett or you're banned from the channel.
Makes sense.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, so we have lots more to get to, so we're gonna roll into a break, but come back, lots more after this.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of On the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it, "You must unlearn what you have learned." And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
At the same time that more and more Americans across America are getting fired up to engage in this 2020 election, efforts continue to make sure that as few of them can as possible, with voter suppression efforts going on across the country. And joining us now to break down his research into this area, once again joining the Damage Report, Greg Palast, investigative reporter and writer of 4 New York Times bestsellers, including The Best Democracy Money Can Buy. Greg, welcome back to the show.
Glad to be with you, John.
Great to have you here. Look, there's several different topics I want to get into with you, but you have a new video that we want to talk about. This is about the nexus of voter suppression, race, and mass shooting. So let's show it to the audience.
9 people have been killed in a second mass shooting in less than 24 hours.
This investigating it happened in the shooting in the city.
My cousin TJ was killed on my B-day. He was 25, I just turned 25. Never thought in my mind he would be the one to die in a massive shooting in the town of mine. He got 4 kids, knee high, that cut deep, huh? He can't work in the morning, he can't feed them. He got a wife at home, she can't see him. He got sisters, bro, they really need him. On top of that, his kids want to see him. Bones to pick, this world is sick. Mental health and entitlement, devil supremacists, it led to this. Together we stand, divided we fall. We should throw hands before we bear arms. For all the victims, I'm crushed by your loss. Even though you're gone, we still holding on.
No matter where you go, I'ma keep holding on. Standing in the rain, we gon' get through the storm. Yes, the tide close, it might hit the coast. I'll be by your side, we still holding on. Yeah, yeah, we still holding on. Man, the world cold, it's hard to cope. I got your back and we still holding on.
Take my hand, who gon' take my hand? And when I take a stand, they gon' kill me where I stand. I walk through the land, step through the fields of sand. Following the footsteps, lead me to the promised land. Heal the world, words is not enough. I'm fighting for the ones not standing up. That can't speak up, it's hard enough that they indulge in killing us.
No matter where you go, I'ma keep holding on. Standing in the rain, we gon' get through the storm. Yes, the tide close, it might hit the coast. I'll be by your side, we still holding on. Yeah, yeah, we still holding on.
So Greg, tell me about that.
Okay, you had Jevon Lamar on, great hip-hop artist there, who's from Dayton. His cousin TJ was massacred as one of the 9 people in the Dayton shooting. And I do want to relate this to voting. It is. He is my assistant producer and front point man down in Dayton and in Ohio. And this song, if you go to JevonLamar.com, you download it, donate to Daybreak Dayton, by the way, which is a homeless shelter for kids dealing with violence in Dayton. And Jevon himself was at that homeless shelter. The reason we did this, okay, was to support, remind people why you're voting and what you're doing. He's part of a whole campaign to uncover vote suppression in Ohio, working with me and was assistant producer on our film, The Best Democracy Money Can Buy, which is filmed a lot of it in Dayton. And I'll tell you why, okay? You saw that town. It's destroyed. Okay, it's one of the reasons why people pick up guns. It's an absolutely desperate place. It's lost half of its population. About 50% of the homes are in foreclosure or are simply abandoned. It's a war zone. And what they do, why is that important? The answer is because when people don't have homes, when people have no place to be, they can't vote. And by the way, the GOP, I caught them in Michigan, challenging the right to vote of people if they're living in their homes, if they've been foreclosed because it's supposedly not a legitimate address. The other thing, the state of Ohio just removed 500,000 voters, the GOP Secretary of State. Now, you have to understand, Obama won that state twice. Mm-hmm. He really did win it in 2016, the Democrats won it in 16. But there was mass erasure of black voters from the voter rolls in Ohio. And we uncovered some of these tricks in the film. We uncovered something that they used in Ohio called interstate cross-check. If you remember Chris Kobach of Kansas, always think KKK. He's the guy who came up with this system of saying people are voting twice. He targeted over 500,000 people in the state of Ohio saying that they were registered or voting twice. By the way, there is no such instances. Mm-hmm. And yet they removed 500,000 people from the voter rolls. Now understand, in Ohio, they use something called purge by postcard. So they send out, they don't just remove everyone on Chris Kobach's racist hit list, they send you postcards. Or if in Ohio you skip a couple votes, then you also get a postcard. If you don't answer the postcard, you lose your vote. We call it purge by postcard, on the grounds that supposedly not answering that postcard means you've left the state. No, they haven't left the state. They've been pushed out of the economy. Now, for Stacey Abrams' organization, Fair Fight, my investigative team actually went through the names that were purged in that state, in Georgia. We literally went through all the names of people purged by postcard to see if they'd actually left the state, as Chris Kobach, and in Georgia, a guy named Brian Kemp, the governor who beat Stacey Abrams, supposedly. And we found that 340,134 people, exactly, we have the names and addresses, did not, never left their voting address. And they removed them from the voter rolls anyway for having moved. This is the game they're playing in the swing states. Georgia is a swing state. It is the first Deep South minority-majority state. Stacey Abrams, as she says, won that race. She just wasn't inaugurated governor. After she read our reports which you can read, by the way, gregpalace.com from the Palace Investigative Fund. Now, we're not just working in Georgia, where we're working with Stacey Abrams. We are also working in Ohio. We're suing the state of Ohio to get all the names and addresses of people they've purged by this postcard method. And by the way, sending out postcards is itself, you may not realize this, is kind of a racist little trick, because they know that postcards sent to people in urban areas and renters and students who move about, they don't get returned the way you do from the suburbs. In fact, the Census Bureau has said that if you're, if you're black, if you're urban, if you're young, if you're a renter, you're 600% less likely to return a government postcard as a white suburban homeowner. Wow. So they know if they use the postcard trick, they knock off people who, by definition, like renters, move. You don't lose your vote because you moved. You don't lose your vote because you've been foreclosed. People in Dayton are always doubling up and tripling up because they're losing their houses. They know who they're removing, and that's the trickery that's being played. That's one of the reasons I have that we filmed about the massacre, but this will seg into the filming about voting in Dayton, or the attempt to take away the vote of people in Dayton.
Yeah, really exciting, by the way, that you've been working with Stacey Abrams, because she obviously has experienced firsthand the electoral implications of this sort of voter suppression. And what you've described in a number of different ways is very scary. And so we're really thankful to have both investigative reporters like yourself and also people like Stacey Abrams working on this. Everybody watching this should definitely look into Greg's website, learn more about his recent investigations. Greg, as always, we love having you on. Thank you.
Thanks, John. See you then.
We're gonna take a short break. When we come back, Rudy Giuliani, the cybersecurity czar of the White House, having a little bit of tech trouble of his own. We'll describe that after this. Donald Trump only chooses the best people to serve in the White House, and the best of the best is undoubtedly Rudy Giuliani. You might know that he's not only the personal lawyer to Donald Trump, but he's also served as the cybersecurity czar. Although he's had a few difficulties in that area himself, precisely 26 days after he was tapped to advise Trump on cybersecurity, the former mayor went to a San Francisco Apple store and asked an employee to help him unlock his iPhone 6. Why, you might ask? Well, he'd reportedly locked himself out because he'd entered his passcode wrong 10 times, disabling the device.
Hey, it was secure. His phone was so secure, not even he could hack into it.
Oh my God, it's like the whole can God create a boulder too heavy for God to lift thing.
That's exactly what I was gonna say, because I'd heard that before.
Really? You've never heard that?
No.
That's a thing, it's a theological question. Can God create a boulder too heavy for himself to lift?
I don't deny it, and it makes sense that it exists. I just wasn't gonna say that.
Well,
and you just blew my mind.
Buckle up, buddy, because this segment's about that now. No, anyway, so we're gonna talk here. So this is a stupid nonsense story.
But
it does
no,
sort of make you think, but it's not that simple. It makes you think. So, did he forget his password on his phone, which he's always on and has entered 1,000 times? Did he forget it and then try 10 separate attempts at it? Or was it not his finger, was it his butt? Because we know he butt dials people. Maybe he butt passworded.
It's just amazing all the different ways you could picture Rudy Giuliani messing up his own password. A, he forgot it. B, like just like the way he lies and just pushes on through with it. He's like, no, this is my password. This is my password. You're rejecting it, but it's not.
Yeah.
And just the moment. We've got to track down the person who actually, the genius who had to help him.
Well, we have a little bit of information in that area, because the thing is, like NBC News, like even if it's a stupid story, NBC News is like, well, we got to investigate this. And so
out.
They did. NBC News reviewed a photo of an Apple Store internal memo for a customer named Rudolph Giuliani, which could be any number of people, with a number attached to his firm, Giuliani Partners. That narrows it down. The news outlet also spoke to a former Apple Store employee who was present and another source familiar with the incident. NBC News, like, take a half day. You don't need multiple sources for this story.
Yes, you do.
Stupid little
thing. No, I think that's great. It's just the kind, you hold yourself to the same journalistic standard every time.
I get that.
If you're going to come at mainstream media, at least they're doing stuff like that.
No, I know. And look, they did a good job, okay? So, what are the implications of this? You might think, well, obviously there's none. And you're mostly right, but Apple staff reportedly erased Giuliani's phone and set it up as new from an iCloud backup, according to a memo seen by NBC News. That would mean that the president's lawyer's phone data is stored on Apple's iCloud, or at least was at the same time he was the nation's top cyber guy, which is now a term.
Thanks, Jennings Brown.
And so, yeah, it's just floating around in the clouds.
And this is something that always I keep coming back to, is if you support Trump and Giuliani, how? How can you think
you'll
of
like
these
them,
folks as the smart ones, as the leaders that you want to follow, when they're doing things that are so patently, empirically embarrassing that he would have to go to the genius bar and at the same time has been placed in charge of all these things? And the only answer I can have is your professed support of these people is disingenuous. You just want to feel a certain way about the world, knowing that you're essentially disenfranchised from it. At least you can support people, and when you support them, it makes other folks angry, because the world is so, I mean, this is the most of a benefit of the doubt I can give to folks. It's like nothing around me makes any sense, so I'm going to support people who, by supporting them, I'm making the least sense. Like, I don't get it. Did I figure it out?
Yeah, you nailed it.
I don't know what to do. Okay. And I feel like I, similar to when I said you lost some kind of discussion earlier, I feel like I've lost a discussion earlier by trying to figure out why you would still support Rudy Giuliani.
You didn't lose a discussion. We've all lost in a metaphysical sense.
That must be
But
what
you
I'm
have not individually lost. So look, I want to be really clear. I'm not getting down on someone for getting locked out of their account and having to go to a Genius Bar. You're allowed to do that because you've never been an official advisor on cybersecurity. And by the way, it's not like Giuliani was just plucked out of nowhere to serve that role. After 9/11, he traveled the globe advising, I think, Mexico City on cybersecurity efforts and things like that. He's never known. He's the only person in the world who still butt dials people.
But like that is the consultant game. And that's,
yeah,
that
it doesn't
exists
make any
everywhere.
Sense.
It's he, and it's the same game that Trump plays. It's why they're so good together. Mm-hmm. Is because Trump is just licensing his name onto things that you want to seem ritzy.
Yeah, Giuliani, I guess, is the other example.
And
that.
Julie is licensing his. Mm. He's going around professing to be, as he was America's governor or mayor in the wake of 9/11. He never let it happen again. Somehow he branded himself a security
guy.
Never
let it happen. 9/11 is 0% on Rudy Giuliani. I want to be very clear about that. But it's weird to build your brand in the way he did because his brand wasn't, here is how you project strength and calm in the wake of a tragedy. His brand was stopping tragedies, but he didn't stop the tragedy. He projected stability and calm in the wake of a tragedy. So it's weird how you can brand that. You're 100% right.
And he frisked everyone who didn't deserve it.
That's true. Oh yeah, no, he's a terrible guy. Look, now this is obviously a funny story. That's why we're talking about it. But it's an inroad to a more important conversation about this. Because it's one thing to like look at the cybersecurity advisor to the president and say he's a joke. Obviously, he's a joke. But this exists in a cloud of, like the president's lawyer's data, it exists in a cloud of similar issues. And that is that Donald Trump refuses to use a secure phone, even though they've tried to get him to do that. Everyone in the White House uses private email for official business. The GOP is doing everything they can to block election security efforts. Just recently, this was a weird piece of news that just slid under everyone's radar for the most part. White House cybersecurity chief quits, says leadership is inviting an attack. That wasn't even really news last week. But so Rudy Giuliani, like I hope that you hook him with him being a chucklehead who has to go to the Genius Bar. But then the meat of that sandwich is they don't take any of this seriously. And why would they? Donald Trump has no incentive to secure anything. He has profited greatly from the insecurity of these exact systems.
What do you mean he's profited greatly off the insecurity of these
exact systems? The fact that the DNC was so easy to hack into sort of worked out for him.
Yeah, but like why? He has no incentive to do anything.
Why would he push for election security measures? Why would he have a stern talking to with Mitch McConnell?
Yeah, okay.
I get what you're saying. Maybe he would have more of an incentive for his own phone, but clearly it's not affecting him. He doesn't want to do it.
Well, right. But see, what would happen if he had his phone hacked? The response would be, that's all fake. It doesn't exist. That's not mine. I mean, it hasn't stopped him
before.
It wouldn't actually get through to his phone. Yeah, it's just like a constant messaging that we all have to do in order to reinforce that like something is wrong here. I did see that story about the cybersecurity person leaving and saying things otherwise. It's just you never know how it's going to be used by other folks in the media. When this happened, it was like, yeah, of course, someone quit and they said, I don't like it here. Mm-hmm. But that, I think the more disturbing thing about that story is all the people who are good at stuff have left. Yeah. And it's only run by people who are bad at stuff.
Yeah.
That's what's so frustrating. And that's why I don't know what to call it. I've been like resigned culture. Like I can't be here anymore to watch the hen house. So I quit. And all that's left is foxes.
Yeah. Yeah. It's burnout. Burnout of control. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's gonna be my new book. Or if I turn right wing, it'll be triggered and there'll be a picture of me on the front. Mm-hmm. Anyway, we're gonna take a short break. We come back. Another guest is gonna join us after this. In the past couple of years, I've described the support for Donald Trump as a cult of personality, as cultish behavior, but I am by no means an expert on cults or people who are in cults. So we decided to get an expert on exactly that. And that expert joins us now. Stephen Hassan, cult expert, internationally sought after expert on cults and undue influence, author of multiple books, including the newest released just a couple of weeks ago, The Cult of Trump. You seem like the perfect guest to explain this phenomenon to us. So thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me. And this has been 40 plus years of my life work as a mental health professional, as a former cult member myself in the Moonies. And I describe exactly in this new book, I think, what's going on, and that I think will cut through a lot of the confusion.
Well, look, I definitely think that people should read the book, but give them a little bit of a taste of what it is that you describe in The Cult of Trump.
Sure. So, for example, what we need to understand is that there's an ethical influence and an unethical influence on the influence continuum. So legitimate groups, legitimate religions, give informed consent. They honor the person's free will. They encourage the person to read whatever they want to read, talk to whoever they wanted to talk to, and make their own decisions. On the destructive end of the continuum, unfortunately, lying by withholding, distorting information, a lot of fear, a lot of guilt, a lot of confusion, a demand for obedience and dependency. Mm-hmm. And when I describe Donald Trump, who, by the way, grew up 1.3 miles from me in Queens, New York, when I describe him, I put him next to people like my former cult leader, Sun Myung-moon, Ron Hubbard, Jim Jones, Charles Manson, Lyndon LaRouche, because they fit the malignant narcissist profile. Someone who is unable to have empathy, grandiose claims, never takes responsibility, pathological lying, thinks they're above the law. Mm-hmm. And so I lay out in a full chapter the criteria of what characterizes a destructive cult leader. And again, referring to the influence continuum, of course, we have other political leaders, but they care about the truth and facts. They care about admitting if they made a mistake. They don't blame everybody else. They don't project all of their stuff on everybody else. But they believe in rule of law and the Constitution and the checks and balances. Furthermore, I go into the book about the whole history of the media, of propaganda, of disinformation campaigns, and how right now we're experiencing psychological warfare type level of disinformation that's aimed to delegitimize truth itself, delegitimize legitimate leaders, institutions, and to make people feel powerless and hopeless, actually, to give up to the authority figure who says, trust me, I know everything.
So when
then I go into the groups that are controlling Trump and the base that are the fervent followers, and I describe how they're like cult figures.
So just one question here. When I think of cults and how they end up making news, if they do make news, it has to do with putting on Nikes and killing themselves, and or like some kind of mass sarin gas attack on some kind of subway, you know? So the question is, how far, in your estimation, is the cult of Trump from doing something like that? And do you foresee it ever getting to that situation?
So unfortunately, the moment Donald Trump said I could shoot someone on Fifth Avenue and people will follow me blindly, I've had a deep concern of how dangerous this individual is. Honestly, I was in the Moon cult during the Nixon impeachment period, and I went from thinking Nixon was a crook before I was recruited deceptively into the Moonies to fasting for Nixon because Moon said God had chosen him to be president. And right now there are millions of Americans who are being misled by their religious leaders, saying that they think Trump is like a King Cyrus figure, that God is using him, and therefore we need to give total allegiance to him. To answer your question, I'm very concerned in any organization where there's this absolute need for dependency, obedience, and loyalty, where people who say critical things, they're the enemies of the people, the media, which we know is like one of the most important checks and balances on abuse of power. And my fear is that the right, extreme right-wing media has been talking conspiracy theories for a very long time, where many people are stockpiling assault rifles and machine guns and are believing that there needs to be a civil war in the United States. This is one of my deeper fears.
So that really gets into what might happen if the impeachment goes through or if he loses re-election. But let's say hypothetically that he either loses re-election and does step down, or if he were to pass away in office. What I'm curious about is your experience with other cults having to deal with the loss of the figurehead. How do you think these millions of Americans might respond if he either is no longer in power or if he were to pass away at some point?
That's a good question. I can only speculate that Trumpism will continue even if he's removed from office or if he dies in office due to his ill health. So I'm very concerned about this whole mentality that's been inculcated in American consciousness that we need to hate our fellow Americans. We need to call them names. We need to put them down. We need to ignore rules of law and forget about the Constitution, even though Trump and the cabinet all swore loyalty to the Constitution. They're not following the Constitution. So I'm very concerned.
And so you said you were in a cult, you got out. These people, by your definition, seem to be in a cult. How did they get out? What kinds of things should people be saying? Because we all like bang our head against the wall to figure out how to get through to people who are in the cult of Trump. What's your advice for trying to get people out of it?
Right. So thanks for making that point. And I want to state categorically that the natural or the normal reaction when someone finds out the friend or a loved one is getting into Scientology, for example, or is getting involved with some multi-level marketing scam, is to want to shake them and say, hey, it's a cult, you're being brainwashed. And it usually has the opposite effect of making people more defensive and driving them deeper in, because they've already been told they're going to be persecuted. So what I'm advocating in my book is that the family and friends who have loved ones who are believing totally in Donald Trump and that whole the whole ideology of Trumpism, they need to start reaching out and reminding their loved ones of happy family memories, bring out photos and videos, agree not to even talk about politics at first if you've broken off all contact for an extended period of time, and find common ground where you can talk together. Now, another technique that I teach my clients when they're trying to help a loved one in a cult is you can't make them leave or talk them out of it. You can encourage them to reflect and analyze and reevaluate and change their own minds. And the easiest way to do that is by explaining mind control, which on the influence continuum looks at behavior control, information control, thought control, and emotional control. And I have this all listed in the Cult of Trump book. But also talk about another group that they would agree is a destructive force or a destructive cult. And with people who are in Trumpism, Chinese communist brainwashing is what I advocate a discussion about. And it's very interesting that while China is doing programs on over a million people in their own country, they're accusing Hong Kong of brainwashing the students to protest them. And so a whole discussion of what is brainwashing. And the reality is when I was had a deprogramming in 1976, what helped me get out of the Moonies was understanding Chinese communist brainwashing criteria. Robert Lifton wrote the seminal book on the subject and outlined 8 criteria of brainwashing or mind control, or he liked the term thought reform. And I've taken my BITE model and based it on his model. And it provides a behavioral mechanism to this look at facts and then to self-reflect. How did I ever come to believe in this? Like, go back in time. How did I come to believe in Moon? Or how did I come to believe in Trump? And kind of with a perspective, look at the techniques of influence that were being used. And I would say categorically, the universal mind control technique that all cults use is phobia indoctrination, the installation of irrational fears that if you question the leader or the doctrine or the group or want to leave, terrible things are going to happen to you. So in the mind of someone who's under mind control, they can't imagine leaving. They can't imagine changing their mind and being happy and fulfilled. They can only generate negative scenarios, John.
Wow. Well, that is fascinating. I wish that we had more time to get into this. But for people who are interested in learning more about the cult, and especially as you were talking about, if they have family members, they should look into The Cult of Trump as well as your other books, Combating Cult Mind Control and Freedom of Mind. Stephen Hassan, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks. Love to do it again, John. I'll like your work.
Let's talk soon. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
We're going to take a short break here. When we come back, the Keystone XL pipeline. Everyone said it couldn't possibly leak, but what do you know? It sprung one. We'll talk about it after this. The Keystone XL pipeline was protested for a number of months because of significant fears, not only about the damage the construction of the pipeline initially would do, but also the continuing threat that would exist as long as the pipeline existed, that it would someday leak. And we were assured that that would not happen, but of course it has happened. It's happened before and it just happened again, with more than 9,000 barrels of oil estimated to have spilled from a leak in the Keystone pipeline in northeastern North Dakota. It's the second significant spill in 2 years in the pipeline that runs from Canada's tar sands region and through 7 US states. The oil spill affected a wetlands area. TC Energy, formerly known as TransCanada, and which operates the pipeline, said Thursday an estimated 9,120 barrels of oil, around 383,000 gallons, enough to fill half of an Olympic-sized swimming pool, was released in the spill. Man, those Olympic-sized swimming pools sure can hold a lot.
Yes.
That's what I learned from this. But anyway, the company put out a statement saying, our emergency response team contained the impacted area and oil has not migrated beyond the immediately affected area. And I don't know what that means.
Well, oil.
So it only affected the area that it affected.
Yes, that's it. And that's all it ever has been. Was
what else could it have affected than the part that it affected?
It just sounds like a statement that should make you think you shouldn't worry. But if you're in the affected area, of course you would worry. And this is precisely what people said they were afraid of. And this is the part that people know about.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, and it's very difficult to monitor the entire expanse of this pipeline. But yeah, pipelines go for miles and miles, and this is exactly what people were complaining about. And the reason they complained about it before is because they know pipelines leak, and they know that areas are affected because they always are. And then when the statement afterwards is for you not to worry about the thing that you warned folks about, it just makes you feel terrible.
Yeah.
And they're going to move on because of course they will.
Yeah, well, because this is just a minor little blip, and then they'll continue making money. If you feel terrible, as Brett alluded to, don't. They're on this. Crews are using vacuum trucks and backhoes to recover the oil.
Watch your mouth.
They're using backhoes to recover the oil? That seems lower tech than I would have expected. So this was terrible. Back in November of 2017, more than 200,000 gallons of oil, around 4,700 barrels, so about half as much, leaked in South Dakota. So from 2017 spill to 2019 spill, it's twice as bad. I'm not amazing at math, but wait until a couple more years go by. I don't know. But anyway, the important thing here, and the reason we're covering this, is not only to say we knew this was going to happen, and in fact it did happen, and it vindicates all of the efforts of so many people who try to stop it from happening, but because this company is trying to make something else happen, and that's another expansion to the pipeline. TC Energy is seeking to build the Keystone XL pipeline that would begin in Alberta, Canada, and go to Seal City, Nebraska. There's a public comment period for this new pipeline that ends November 18th. So you still have almost 3 weeks to lodge public comments, which I'm sure the US government will take very seriously, especially considering what just happened during this period.
They're going to take your comments and clean them up with vacuum trucks and backhoes.
Well, you know what? Let's fill up those backhoes with negative comments. We may not be able to stop it just yet, but we can at least go on the record as saying that we stood against this when there was time. Thank you so much.
Thank you, John. It's been a pleasure. It always is.
It always is. You're fun, even when you're preemptively trying to make me look stupid. So thank you for that.
It doesn't take that much effort. It does, though. I'm just kidding. Okay. We do love each other.
Watch Happy Half Hour, maybe. I don't know. We'll see. Thank you, as always. Thank you, as always. We'll see you on Monday. Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.